You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the modern format. Each week, we go deep on designing spicy new decks geared at tournament play. We put our creations to the test in competitive leagues and share our findings on the air. If you would like to support Faithless Brewing, please give us your feedback to help us grow and improve the show. You can find us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG or on the Modern subreddit at r/ModernMagic. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to episode 1 of Faithless Brewing, a modern podcast for the Spike Rogue. My name is Dan Schriever, also known as Cave Dan on Magic Online, and I'm joined by my co-hosts David Robertson and Damon Alexander. If you're new to the cast, which would make sense since this is our very first episode, let me just say a quick word about what we're all about. This podcast is all about deck building. We are trying to develop sweet new decks, or tap into the potential of cards who we think have promise that hasn't quite been realized yet. But we also want these decks to be competitive, in the sense that, realistically, most matches of Modern are played in a tournament format of some kind, whether that's Friday Night Magic or a Magic Online League. And there's nothing more disappointing than really pouring some of your heart and your passion into a sweet new deck idea, only to show up, sit down for your match, and find out that your deck just doesn't even function. Or that the sweet combo that you're really excited to pull off just isn't even close to competitive in the context of what's happening in Modern. That can be a tricky balancing act. The Modern format can be famously unforgiving, and it can be hard to balance the desire to play with something new and cool that you worked on yourself with the desire to win and get results. So there's a real tension there that I think you're going to hear us wrestling with throughout these episodes. We have a lot of sweet deck ideas that we want to explore, but we're also realists. When we register for a tournament, we are trying to get that 5-0 or that top 8 finish or that day 2. And there's a real tension there between the desire to win and the desire to win on your own terms or win with your own deck. That tension is what we're referring to with the term Spike Rogue. If you follow Modern closely enough to be listening to this podcast, for example, there's a good chance you are a Spike, but you also probably have a little bit of Rogue in you, or a lot of Rogue. Wherever you fall on that spectrum, whether you are an unabashed lover of jank brews, or whether you are a tournament grinder who just appreciates innovation and a little bit of variety, we hope that our cast has something to offer you, if not necessarily format-breaking tech, at least not every time, at least a bit of entertainment and possibly some inspiration. With that said, what we do on each episode is a deep dive into a single card that we think has a lot of potential in Modern. Each week, we're going to discuss a few different ways that you could build a deck around the card of the day, a few different sketches. And we'll try to vet those ideas with each other, challenge each other, argue a little bit about card choices or whether something is actually viable. Maybe we'll throw a deck out entirely. But we don't want the cast to be pure theory or pure speculation, so what we'll do is, at the end of each episode, we'll choose a list or two lists that we think has promise. We'll take that list and we'll do some playtesting with it throughout the week. We'll take it through some Magic Online leagues or we'll play it in a local tournament. And then, at the beginning of the next week's cast, we'll revisit that list. We'll talk about what we learned, how the games went, any adjustments we make, or whether we think the strategy has a future going forward. So that's the plan. We're excited to share it with you. We don't have a deck to discuss from last week, since this is our very first show. So that means we'll be diving straight into our brewing session, talking all about one of the most exciting cards from War of the Spark, Neoform. So sit back, put your brewing caps on, and enjoy the show. So today we're going to talk about a new one from War of the Spark, Neoform. Neoform is a sorcery for one blue, one green. As an additional cost to cast it, you sacrifice a creature, and then you search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to 1 plus the mana cost of the creature you sacrificed. Put that into play.
Very importantly, specifically 1 plus, not like Eldritch Evolution, which is that casting cost plus 2 or less.
Yes, yes. So in some ways a key difference, or in some ways not. I guess it depends on what you're trying to do with the card. So much more restrictive in what it can grab, but in exchange, it's only 2 mana instead of 3, which is like a difference of about a million in Modern, in my opinion. So if you're comparing it head-to-head in the sort of tutor class, you can think of Neoform as something that would compete with a card like Eldritch Evolution, Court of Calling, even Collective Company.
Vanifar is the closest. There's almost the exact same templating.
Yes, that's right. Vanifar and
Birthing. Using different roles, though.
So you can think of it as like, well, does my creature toolbox deck want Neoform instead of one of these other creature tutors? Or if you're thinking, I just want the Eldritch Evolution effect, now I can have 8 copies of it. If you consider it more or less the same card as Eldritch Evolution, you could build a deck around having 8 of that. I think there's a lot of buzz around this card. I think a lot of people are brewing it. I referenced that I actually faced 2 different Neoform decks in the league that I was playing today, and I faced it a lot more in the practice rooms. People are all about this card, and we have some ideas too. So, Dave, why don't you tell us what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I mean, I brewed up a list that sounds similar to what you're talking about, and there's lots of different ways to do it. We'll just quickly address it. I don't want to go too deep. Well, I guess let's say, first of all, I think this card may have applications in the Visir of Remedies Devoted Druid list. I did not propose any of those. I think that's kind of the first thing you'd want to do with new cards is see if they fit into existing shells. So I expect like the Sam Pardees and the Matt Nasses of the world to see if that works. And like you say, is it a better version of some of the other tutors in there? So I'm not proposing any list like that. I think that area will be well explored by, you know, many great brewers. I proposed a all-in sort of Allosaurus rider, if you want to describe that card. It's very strange, but it's basically the free green spell from Cold Snap.
Yeah, that's right, Cold Snap, yeah.
So you can exile 2 green cards from your hand and cast it. It is a 7-mana creature with, you know, an irrelevant power and toughness because this card basically lets you put a free 7-mana, 7cc creature into play. And if you Neoform or Eldritch Evolution a 7-mana creature, that lets you put a Gristlebrand into play. And I think anyone who studied Modern knows that once you have a Gristlebrand in play, you can use Nourishing Shoal to discard expensive green spells. And we already get to play the very expensive Allosaurus Rider. Everything after the first one is useless. And then you can draw your hand and hope, or draw your deck and either play a Seismic Assault or put a Borborygmos into play and pitch lands to do 20 damage to your opponent. I think basically what everyone's trying to explore is, can you make a deck that, as you said earlier, Dan, like super all in? It really folds to one piece of interaction. It kind of reminds me of like the initial Modern Pro Tour in that way. It has a reasonable percent chance at 2 turn 2 wins, especially with the London Mulligan rule. I needed like a Frank Karsten, but without disruption, I mean, it could probably do it like 15% of the time or maybe 20% of the time on turn 2.
I'll just mention that I got killed on turn 1 twice in the practice room.
Yeah.
With people playing this.
So I think there's something here that's maybe like dangerous to Modern. You know, it's one of those decks where maybe it's not consistent enough to win a tournament, but it is consistent enough to make the 1 or 2 rounds you play against it totally miserable. You can't interact with it if it nut draws. You get to play Summoner's Pack for free because you're never going to pay for the Summoner's Pack. So you have 8 Allosaurus Riders, and then you get to play Neoform and Eldritch Evolution. So you have 8 tutors. You can play Metamorphose to help fix your mana. And it also turns the red mana from Simeon Spirit Guides once you've drawn your deck into mana to cast another Neoform to play another Borborygmos. My proposed list had Chancellor of the Tangle, which gives you a free green mana on your first turn and is also an expensive green creature to pitch to Nourishing Shoal. So, yeah, I think I don't know what the best build of this deck is. I think there's a bunch of different ways you could go from the build that I proposed. But yeah, I think this is a deck to watch for. And once you kind of get the better combo minds, you know, like I said, Matt Nash just has a history of taking these decks that kind of seem like they're memes. And then all of a sudden you have other pros saying that they need to get banned. So, I mean, I don't know if the list is exactly there yet, but I feel like the percentage of turn two kills is high enough that there's some warning flags.
Damon, have you come across this deck at all?
No, not yet. I haven't played too much Modern recently. I mean, it looks similar to a Grishul brand shell in a lot of parts, just using Neoform as a different piece of tech than Goryeo's Vengeance, which is, and the Grishul brand has always been a fringe but very powerful deck. I think it had a time where it was actually one of the better decks. So I'm excited about this. I think it seems like a pretty powerful deck. Grishul brand just, usually when Grishul brand hits play, you win the game, is how it works.
So I want to just push on that analogy a little bit, because I feel like the skeleton of using Nourishing Shoal to just draw the deck is the same, and the goal of getting Grishul brand in play is the same, but Goryeo's Vengeance gives it haste, right? So you do get, so you get started with a free hit plus 7 life. And that deck, so there's a couple differences. So one, that one does use the graveyard, whereas the Allosaurus combo does not. But in exchange for using the graveyard, you get instant speed on both of your cheating effects. So both Goryeo's Vengeance and Through the Breach can be done end of turn, for example. You don't run Pacts. Well, what I noticed playing against this Allosaurus deck is that like they're pacting very aggressively. You know, they basically have to win. As soon as you start going, there isn't really going to be a case. Okay, that you could stop once you get a Grishul brand in play. Like, it's not going to die. That did come up in one game. But, like, yeah, when you're using these packs, like, you're kind of putting a lot of pressure on yourself to win immediately. A couple times the players did sort of fizzle. Like, they drew 21 cards and didn't get there. So I'm just, like, wondering, like, is that a significant difference, do you think? Like...
Well, I think there are a lot of weaknesses to how this deck is built, but I think one of the things you're not mentioning is you only get to play for Goryeo's Vengeance, and Through the Breach is not Goryeo's Vengeance, so it's way more expensive. It's a turn four card if you have a Simeon Spirit Guide. This deck gets to play functionally four Neoform-like effects, and it gets to play functionally 8 Allosaurus Rider. So I think that's the real appeal with the Summoner's Pact and Allosaurus Rider.
So to clarify, the list you have has 8 Neoform effects with Eldritch Evolution, right? So it's 8 and 8?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I think it has, like Dan says, it has weaknesses and strengths, but the main strength and the other benefit of getting to play 4 Summoner's Pacts is... After you've Summoner's Pact for an Allosaurus Rider, every other Summoner's Pact after that helps you find the other half of your Nourishing Shoal combo, because you can Summoner's Pact for an Adoxon, I don't know how to say it, Worm, or another Allosaurus Rider, or a Chancellor of the Tangle. So you functionally, once you've started the combo, you're much less likely to miss, because a Nourishing Shoal can, you have additional copies of things to pitch to Nourishing Shoal.
What is the value of Chancellor of the Tangle? So I get it does two things, right? So if you send your opening hand, you get 1 mana on your first main phase. And beyond that, it's just a green card that you can pitch to the Allosaur, or you can pitch to the Nourishing Shoal. Is that enough to give it 4 slots? I mean, what are you using that mana on the first turn or not?
Well, the hope is that you would be using the mana on your first turn. It gives you a lot of outs to your turn one wins. Now, I think the perfect version of this deck hasn't been discovered, and I don't know if it'll include Chancellor of the Tangle or not, but I think the way I would try to approach a deck like this that's so all-in is to try to push the non-interactiveness of it as far as I can and see how many games we can steal, because we can't really play Magic the Gathering with this deck. And Chancellor of the Tangle is not about that life. And the green mana is relevant, even if you have like a green and a blue land, because it lets you turn green mana into any colors with Mana Morphos. So it always lets you Neoform regardless of what your other land is, or it lets you turn that mana into other things.
Yeah, I think that's a card I would have my eye on if we end up testing this, just to see like how often we actually use that turn one mana. Because if we're not using it, let's say, I'll just throw it, I don't know. If we're not using it 60% of the time, 70% of the time that it's in our opening hand, I just don't think that it's worth a slot.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if it wasn't needed, but like I said, for the sort of the initial builds, I think it's an interesting... It also gives you a way to like basically play rituals that also function as, like you say, a discard outlet to Allosaurus Rider and a reasonable card to pitch to Nourishing Shoal. So it's attractive for a few other reasons, but I do agree with what you're saying. I mean, it's certainly possible a Chancellor of the Tangle is the worst card in the deck, and that's sort of the perfect version when it gets sculpted, and it sounds like everyone's in the practice room trying to steal those turn two.
Not just the practice room, they're in the leagues too, and I've seen people on the
now, are forums. They Chancellor of the Tangle? Have you seen anyone reveal it ever?
Yes, as far as I can tell, they're all playing Chancellor of the Tangle, and I think we're getting a deck dump tomorrow. We're recording this on a Monday. I think the deck dump will be tomorrow with the first set of decks using War of the Spark cards. And some people on Twitter have been saying, yeah, you'll see my list there. They've been posting 5-0s with this. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of which ones survive. I think you could also play like Children of the Corliss or two, and you could play the red-green hybrid 1/1 that sacrifices to make a man of any color.
Wild Canter.
Yeah, Wild Canter into Children of Corliss as a way to also not fizzle with Griselbrand. So I think there's a lot of different ways that it could be built. And I think that the deck, I don't actually think it's very exciting. I think if this deck is really good, it's just terrible for Modern. And if it's bad, we just like wasted our time. Like, I don't think decks like this are ever like fun.
Right.
I think Griselbrand just never should have been printed, to be honest. But... I think what's interesting about this deck also is that it doesn't get hosed by Surgical like the Griselbrand deck runs the risk of. Right. That's a pretty good spot to be in Modern right now. It's kind of hard to attack the combo besides the stack.
That's a good point. I sided in two Surgicals. I was on the blue-white deck, which had two Surgicals on the board. And I had so many dead cards in the main, like the Wall of Omens. I was just like, well, maybe I can counter something and Surgical it, but... That just never came up. The deck is, it's kind of remarkable that it doesn't rely on the graveyard. It's shocking. Yeah.
I mean, I guess Grafdigger's Cage could, become the sideboard card of choice. That does actually shut this deck down, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, that's a great call.
Ooh, that's spicy.
Or like Dan was saying, any kind of effect that doesn't let Griselbrand use its ability. So Piling Needle, the Compass or whatever, where you get to look at their hand and then name a card.
Sorcerer's Spyglass,
yeah.
This deck, Griselbrand doesn't die at end of turn. Like, honestly, like, there are plenty of games where a 7/7 lifelinker just kind of wins the game.
8/8 lifelinker. 8/8 lifelinker. He's got a counter.
Sorry, Neoform.
So I guess that is another advantage it has over the Goryeo's Vengeance, is that you just end up with this giant guy in play.
So it's a deck that I kind of threw together, and I think a lot of people have had similar ideas. I don't think I'm kind of treading on any new ground. And like I said, I'm hoping that this deck is actually bad. It does show you the power of Neoform. Like you said, having that 8 copies of Eldritch Evolution, if there's something unfair to be done, it really gives it a lot more consistency. But with decks like this, if they're really good, they're really oppressive. And, if they're bad, they're the kind of glass cannon, like losing to Belcher or something. It's like you don't get to play Force of Will in Modern, so you just hope it's not too consistent.
Yeah, I think I feel the same way, although I did check the prices on some of these cards, and I noticed that some of them were still cheap, so I picked up this playset of Nourishing Shoals for $1, just in case.
There you go.
You can still get your Allosaurus Riders for $1.50 and your Nourishing Shoals for $1, like, for the next day, perhaps. I'll just mention, I think we'll be seeing versions of this deck talked about a lot this week because it will be showing up on the 5-0 lists. I think there's still a lot of variations in the specifics. Like I think, David, you mentioned we need some card selection, so like Serum Visions. I've seen some guys playing Incubation Incongruity, which digs 5 cards deep and also happens to be a green card that you can pitch for the Allosaurus Rider.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
The choice of kill conditions seems to be up in the air. I think there are 3 red cards that have similar effects. There's Seismic Assaults, Conflagrate, and Lightning Storm, all let you discard a bunch of lands. or cards in hand for the cost of three red mana. Borborygmos, Enraged, is works similarly and has the benefit of being a big green card that you can pitch to either the Shoal or the Allosaurus Rider. The awkward thing about him is that if you happen to draw all of your copies of Borborygmos in your hand, you can't get him into play from there. So like you have to Neoform or Evolution him out while he's still in the deck. Otherwise, he can't win for you. And the third win condition that someone played against me was Lab Maniac. And that build actually had Serum Powders in it. So he was actually going very aggressive, powdering away, making his deck smaller, and then just drawing himself out with the Singleton Lab Maniac and Gristlebrand.
The Serum Powder is really tough because if you mill away some amount of Gristlebrands or Lab Maniacs, then you can't win.
Yeah, but I mean, this was a grinder that I trust. Raging Tilt Monster, I think this is Moto username. I've seen him a lot on the 5-0 list, so I'm going to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like a deck that if you don't want to take risks, maybe playing Summoner's Pact in a 17-land deck with no intentions of paying for it. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
One guy actually paid for his pact against me. Oh. I thought I had won. He used the pact negation, and then like the next turn, he just exiled some spirit guides and stayed in the game. It was very distressing.
Oh yeah, is pact negation, does that belong in this list, by the way? I mean, you've mentioned it a few times, Dan.
Seems to be like extreme. The go-to sideboard strategy is, you know, you build the main deck, as Dave was saying, entirely all in without any interaction. And in the sideboard, you just pick some, you know, interactive pieces and just jam four of them and hope that wins. So I imagine that he was playing four Pact of Negation in the sideboard.
Yeah. Certainly used in Ad Nauseam. So it's like a well-known card for these kind of combo decks.
Yeah. So let's keep an eye on this list, but maybe let's transition to another possibility for Neoform. So tell us about your next shell, David.
All right, so it wasn't that long ago that Bantel Drazi was one of the best decks in Modern. And I think it suffered from the same kind of thing we were talking about last week, where you're just trying to play this like value game. It was pretty grindy. It had some number of Drowner of Hopes at the top of its curve. And, you know, it just wasn't aggressive enough, I don't think, especially once Phoenix took off and some of the more unfair decks became more popular. So one of the things I think that Neoform lets us do is dramatically increase the number of times we can turn two or three Thought Knots here, in conjunction with the London Mulligan rule. So Thought Knot Seer is sort of the Eldrazi deck's way to interact with some of these unfair decks. And if you play it on turn two or three, often they can't, you know, quite go off, or you can take the big payoff spell for Tron, or you can take whatever crucial piece. In addition, it's a reasonable blocker for a bunch of different things. It's lightning bolt proof. As we talked about last week, lightning bolt's very common. So yeah, I basically proposed what was the old Bant Eldrazi list, and then I just worked in a couple of Neoforms and an Eldritch Evolution, and I think there might be something there. You also get to play, you know, four Eldrazi Temples, so you're still cheating on mana. So with the four Noble Hierarchs, plus the Birds, plus the four Temples, plus Neoform, your ability to either like turn two, a three drop, and then Neoform it into your Thought Knot, or just draw your Temples, or draw a Noble Hierarch plus a Temple at turn two. Your turn two or three Thought Knot percentages are super high. And I think that gives a deck like this a chance to compete as Modern, you know, gets faster and faster, really.
So I have some reservations about the plan in the sense that, like, what creatures exactly are you going to sacrifice to bring the Thought Knot into play? Because it would have to be a three drop, right? And the three drop would be one that you paid three mana for, and they have, you know, these Eldrazi have pretty good combat stats, right? So like there's not really any throwaway three drop Eldrazi unless you're thinking about Sky Spawner.
I think Matter Reshaper is a great throwaway Eldrazi.
For value, he's a good throwaway. You can throw him away for value.
Yeah.
And we're in the value train again.
Well, the difference is this value train plays a 5/5 Thought Knot Seer that is disrupting your opponent's plan. I mean, I think that's the key, is you can't just play a value we're not blinking kitchen finks here to gain a bunch of extra life. We're actually taking the best card out of their hand.
Dave, some of every one of your examples comes out of kitchen finks. It's like the dollar conversion amount. Yeah. For everything to kitchen finks. Interesting trend.
Kitchen.
I mean, maybe this deck needs kitchen finks. I do see what Dan's saying in the sense that if you neoform your Matter Reshaper to Thought on Seer, like on the one hand it's sweet, on the other hand you spent 5 mana to get a good card in play, but 5 mana and you've like kind of broken parity on cards. But it just like isn't really like a tempo positive play exactly. Whereas like the Allosaurus Rider to Gristlebrand is like extremely tempo positive.
I mean, this idea of like, you know, identifying Thought Not Seer as the card we want to play, it almost makes me want to play like the OG Eldritch Evolution instead, because that jumps by 2 and then you can sacrifice a 2-drop. And I think maybe like a year or two ago we had been talking about like a green-white Eldrazi shell that actually played like 4 Voice of Resurgence and 3 or 4 Eldritch Evolution with this goal in mind of like, you know, we want to find the Thought Not, let's jump from 2 to 4. Like maybe like if you had Eldritch Evolution here instead, then you could also jump 3 to 5 because I think we do want the Reality Smasher to top the curve off.
Yes.
Right? And we're heaviest at 3 mana in terms of our creature density. So it'd be something to consider.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an Eldritch Evolution in this list, so I certainly think it's a card worth considering, and the numbers on each one and exactly your chance to get a 2-drop into a 4-drop or to play a turn 2 3-drop, you know, there's a lot of math there as to what you might want to be doing. Plus you have your temple draws, right? I mean, sometimes you just draw 2 temples and life is beautiful.
So, okay, 2 more things I want to say, I guess. I think I'm a skeptic of the concepts of like using the sacrifice style cards with the Eldrazi. I'm not sure that Thought Not Seer can like carry that much weight. Like he's not necessarily the best card in Eldrazi decks. Like Temple is the best card because that's a like time walk on, it's a 0 mana time walk that you can play 4 of. And often like the second best card is often Chalice of the Void, which I think part of the reason that you don't see the banned versions of Eldrazi that often is because they're giving up on Chalice, right? They're choosing to play instead, you know, Noble Hierarch and Ancient Stirrings. But I think it's been a few months where like the colorless Serum Powder version has been the most successful Eldrazi build because, you know, it's saying that, you know, our most powerful cards are Temple and Chalice. And then, you know, by extension, maybe even Eternal Scourge is one of the best cards. And then Thought Not being like, oh yeah, that's our good disruptive Eldrazi. He sort of shuts the door on them after you've gotten your Chalice out. I think it's been a little while since Thought Not has been like so good that you can just sort of count on it to win the game. So that would be a concern I would have. If we test this out, I would just want to see like what happens. Like the turn we play Thought Not, is that the turn that we kind of commence our end game, as it were, and like are now ready to sort of attack undisrupted, or is the game going to continue from there? If Thought Not's dying, then I don't want to be cheating him out at this much cost.
Very fair point.
And I guess a second sort of different thought that your shell reminded me of is that if you're thinking of Matter Reshaper and maybe even like Eldrazi Skyspawner as disposable 3-drops in the Eldrazi shell, like there is the Emerge mechanic, Elder Deep Fiend. Has always been on the fringes of being sweet. Like maybe that's sort of, you know, it's not quite the same, right? We're no longer tutoring for anything, but if we're thinking of like what's, you know, the best way to take advantage of the fact that an Eldrazi deck might have these 3-drops that we're happy to get rid of, like maybe we should just be playing Deep Fiends instead.
Actually, Dan, if you put the Allosaurus Rider combo in, you could neoform it to Deep Fiend.
Oh God!
Deep Fiend has a caster, so I know.
Nevertheless, you would get a 6/7 Deep Fiend.
Yeah,
it'd all be worth it.
sorry about the. Deep Fiend does look interesting, but yeah, that does take the deck in a pretty different direction.
So, Damon, what are your thoughts on sort of the Neo Eldrazi concept?
Yeah, I kind of agree that it's not generating a ton of tempo with the kind of Neo form combo, and it's not generating like too much value either on the sack part or the comes in a like new creature part. Thought Knot is definitely a solid card, but it doesn't win a game. Like a single Thought Knot's not going to win the game by itself usually.
Maybe it will, but I'm skeptical of that.
We can, yeah. And honestly, Reality Smasher is in the list. And unfortunately, there's no real way to Neoform into it besides Thought Knot. But that card, you know, you win a lot of games by just smashing.
True. Anything else to say about this Eldrazi concept, David, or should we go to the next list?
No, I think we've covered the strengths and weaknesses of it.
Okay, so the third one that we want to just go over is we're calling it Neo Monkey Grow. So tell us a little bit about this deck, David.
So last year, before we went to the GP, somebody, I think 5-0'd with a rug, or I guess now the kids call it a teamer version, basically took advantage of the fact that Experiment 1 and Cloudfin Raptor are two cheap spells that evolve. And then Young Wolf, if it's targeted with a Pongify effect, Pongify is a one blue instant that destroys target creature and puts a 3-3, in this case, monkey. Rapid Hybridization is a functional reprint that puts a 3-3 fish lizard?
Frog lizard.
So in combination with those two, plus Strangleroot Geist on two, you actually get multiple triggers for your evolved creatures. So you basically build these like super wild Mikados that can eventually get up to 3 or 4 power with very little mana investment. And I think the only red card it played was Lightning Bolt. And I think at 5-0 and maybe Channel Fireball, maybe like Sam Pardee played a list with it. And we kind of tried it out and we found it to be pretty lacking in certain ways. And so we tried to maybe make some tweaks and we found what we thought was kind of a cool interaction that people weren't playing, which was Voice of Resurgence. Voice of Resurgence is sort of like another card you can target where you get value out of destroying it. So instead of, you know, the creature coming back from the graveyard, you generate a Keldon Warlord token for the old school player. Yeah.
A Scion of the Wilds, please don't kill the Warlord.
So we tooled around with that and we kind of, you know, found some cards we thought were good and it didn't quite have all the pieces. So since that time, Pelt Collector has been printed, which has other abilities, but it has that death trigger, but it's functionally another Experiment 1. So we got to get rid of some of the weaker 1 drops that deck was playing. And then Neoform is kind of like another Rapid Hybridization that is also paying you off. So when you're sacrificing any of these creatures with, what is the +1/+1? The anti-persist?
Undying.
Yeah, if you Neoform a Strangleroot Geist, you're getting a 4-3 haste, and you're getting a 3-drop into play, and you're getting the tutor. So one of the problems we were having is we didn't want to bring in that many cards because you can't dilute your plan very much because it's very narrow. You want to Pongify a bunch of, you know, crappy undying creatures. And this lets you, Neoform lets you stay on your plan somewhat. It slows it down because it is an extra mana. But it also lets you play a bunch of cards that may be effective in certain matchups. So your sideboarding plan gets a lot better. So yeah, just real quick to go over the list, I have 4 Pelt Collector, 4 Experiment 1, and 4 Cloudfin Raptor. So those are 12 one drops that all evolve. And Cloudfin Raptor flies, which is very relevant. Then you have your 4 Young Wolf. We identified Sidisi's Faithful as a really cool one of that also sacrifices creatures.
Yes.
It's a pseudo removal spell. It also evolves creatures because it has a very high toughness. So it can take Cloudfin Raptor to a 3-4 and Experiment 1 to a 4-4. And then Dryad Arbor is actually really important because we're playing Neoform now. So you can always Neoform that into the one drop of your choice. Or you can tutor it up on end of step and then Pongify it. So all of a sudden you have a 3-3 at instant speed. Because we're getting to play 3 Neoform, we can play three each of Pongify Rapid Hybridization. I have a one of Vines of Vastwood as sort of our pseudo protection slash it's a two mana do four damage spell. It also can push Pell Collector's Power over four, so it gets trample. That's very relevant. At the two drop slot, you have Strangleroot Geist and Voice of Resurgence. We're playing a one of Avatar of the Resolute. It's sort of our tutor target when we're sacking a one drop with Neoform. It adds, it can add a lot of power to play. We have multiple creatures that can have plus one counters, so it, you know, can easily come into play with five or six power, which again is important to evolve Pell Collector, Experiment One, Clefin Raptor. Then at the three drop, we're sort of forced to add some three drops to get full value out of our Neoform. I think the sideboard, you can imagine all kinds of great targets here. You know, that 1/4 guy that only lets you cast one spell a turn. Kitchen Finks is, I think, Damon's favorite card. We could put that in there for Burn. So this main deck, we have Renegade Rallier. So you can imagine turn two Voice of Resurgence, Neoform it, get back Voice of Resurgence, plus you get the 4/3 Renegade Rallier, plus you get a Scion of the Wilds. So, you know. So
we'll just call it Elemental Token. You get the, fine. You get the Keldon Warlord. The Keldon Warlord.
One of Beauty of Detention as just a kind of get out of jail free card. And then if we really want to just try to win that turn, I have a Groundbreaker. It's the green Ball Lightning for old schoolers like myself. So basically this deck is a very sort of synergistic zoo deck is how I would describe it.
The Green Ball Lightning makes its triumphant entry into Modern. So there was one card that you, I think, do not have in this list, which I think is actually a very exciting card, is Evolution Sage, also from War of the Spark. That's a two colorless and one green for a 3/2 creature, and it has basically Landfall Proliferate. So whenever a land comes into play under your control, proliferate. And I think that card is kind of necessary in order to make Neoform really like pay you every time you draw it, because like your very best starts would involve sacrificing one of your two drops, like the Strangleroot Geist or the Voice of Resurgence. I think that Evolution Sage is like the best possible card you can find when you're sacrificing a Strangleroot Geist, because it comes in as a 3/2 with a counter already on it from the Neoform. You can then make a land drop or two land drops if you have a fetch land. You'd end up with something like 17 power on the third turn off of three cards, right? If you start with a evolved creature on turn one, Strangleroot on turn two, Neoform on turn three, you end up with a 6/6 evolved creature, a 5/4 Strangleroot Geist, you're attacking for 11, and then a 6/5 Evolution Sage. Which, okay, so that's not lethal. That's not like you haven't won the game yet. All you have is three enormous creatures, but it only costs you three cards. And I think that like that kind of like powerful play is something this deck has not really had before. Like it was originally conceived of as kind of a fun build your own Wild in the Cattle deck, kind of a suspicious plan in the context of Modern, and something that like hadn't really aged well as the Modern decks got better over time. But I think that like Neoform, in exchange for being a little bit heavier on the mana, a little bit slower, it does let you just like put a lot more power into play. Like that, so that's like one of the big draws back to this archetype, is that like A, like your main deck plan can make huge creatures much more reliably, and then B, as David was saying, like you can now have like a Hate Bears package in the sideboard. Would you consider Evolution Sage as a one-off here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reasonable argument between it and Groundbreaker, and I think you just need to play games to see which one's better. I think Groundbreaker is better every time it's in your hand, basically, so playing a three drop and then a fourth land is not something this deck is that well equipped to do. So,
but it's a two drop, right? It's a Neoform's a two drop.
I know. I mean, there's only three Neoforms in the decks. Some amount of the time.
But maybe there should be four. I don't know.
Some amount of the time, though, you're going to draw your three drop, right? So Groundbreaker is much better from your hand. I think that's a reasonable statement.
It's hard to cast from your hand. Three green in a three color deck?
Well, every land probably that we put in the deck would make green, maybe with one exception. So,
yeah, I do need to acknowledge that the mana base here kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Like, you need green on turn one, green on turn two, but you also need blue on turn one and blue on turn two and possibly white on turn two. See, basically, you need to go blue-green duel into white-green duel into possibly another blue-green duel.
Yes. I think this is maybe, like, the worst mana you could possibly have. Like, you want to be able to cast Strangleroot Geist, but you also need to be able to cast Pongify on turn two, or you also want to be able to cast Coffin Raptor on turn one. So yeah, the mana is terrible. I think there's arguments either way, and I'd actually have to like play a bunch of games before I knew if Groundbreaker was better than the Land Drop Evolve guy. Groundbreaker also, yeah. Not that it matters. It's more damage that first turn because it attacks for six, and also when it dies, Pelt Collector has a random land text where it would evolve again.
Okay, so David and I have had some experience sort of thinking about this deck and playing it before, but Damon, I'm guessing that this is not one that you faced on your various tournament battles that ended in top eights with tier modern decks. How does this whole plan sound to you?
I mean, I like the 3-3 split on Pondrify Rapid Hybridization. That's a classic modern optimization. To get around pesky meddling mages.
Yeah, humans is tearing it up again, so...
I just decks like this are not my strong suit in terms of understanding how to tune them. It does seem to me like, yeah, like if Neoform is going to be one of your main plans, like why not go four of them? The Pongify, how do you say that? I don't even know how to say that word. Rapid hybridization plan, like you have six of those effects, and it seems like casting that on your like young wolf with like a Pelt Collector in play is like pretty cool, but like that's kind of it. I mean, the EOT fetch Dryad Arbor into like kill your own dude seems like, and I'll just play Lightning Bolt at that point, which does make me wonder, like, is there a rug version of this? It just is a talking point. You have Lightning Bolt as a little bit of extra reach, you get Vexing Devil.
Well,
I believe Teemer is the word you're looking for.
you can get Voice of Resurgence, but then Neoform gets a lot first because you don't have as many good 2-drops to turn into 3-drops. But you could make it almost a purely 1-drop, 2-drop deck. I mean, I think that's...
Yeah. I guess Voice of Resurgence is meant to do a lot of heavy lifting on this list. And that might be reasonable.
So, to your question, like, yeah, there have been people like playing with the Pelt Collector of Vexing Devil pairing. I wouldn't even call it a combo necessarily. But when Pelt Collector was printed, what was that, Guilds of Ravnica, there was like a brief resurgence of interest in like, oh, hey, let's try to make Vexing Devil happen again, because now you have, you know, more of a critical mass of these one-drop evolved creatures. I don't know if they were playing Cauldron Reaper. I think they were just sticking to the more of like a green-based zoo deck with like Goblin Guides and that sort of thing, Wildly Kettles. So, yeah, I mean, Vexing Devil is maybe something we should consider. Voice of Resurgence, he's just been on really hard times lately. Like, that card has not been doing much in the format. And now here we're using him as a combo piece because, you know, we need something to sacrifice, and he's great to sacrifice, but he's still not... Well, he didn't get any better in the context of Modern, apart from that. So it's possible that, you know, he's... will prove to be like not as good as we're imagining he'll be when we draw up these Neoform sequences. I will mention that the card that Voice replaced when we were tweaking the original Teemer version was Avatar the Resolute. So I think two of the big sort of structural changes that we made by switching to Bant were the mana got a lot worse, and B, like now instead of like that earlier deck played four Strangleroot Geist and maybe three Avatar the Resolute, and everything else was a one drop. We are playing four and four of Strangleroot and Voice, and now we have to add 3 drops, so we just can't cheat on lands. Like, we kind of need 20 or 21 lands. We need to draw exactly 2 in the opening hand, no more than 3, and just, like, not flood on them. It's kind of awkward. It's one of those decks where, like, we look at the numbers, right? We have 12 evolved creatures, you know, 10 to 12 of these sacrifice effects. Maybe 12 things we can sacrifice for value, but like just having 12, 12, and 12 doesn't necessarily mean you'll draw them in the right order, and that's kind of frustrating. I actually played a little bit with this show earlier today just to like see how it was feeling, and I was mulliganing a lot. It was a little alarming. It's like the hands weren't quite coming together, but I mean, the deck is still functional. It kind of made me wonder, like, if 12 is too much. Like, it's somehow, like, too much and not enough, if that makes any sense.
12 of which?
That does not make any sense.
Wait, 12 of which effect, Dan?
Well, we have 12 of each. We have 12 evolved creatures, we have 12 sacrifice fodder, and we have 12 sacrifice effects. Right? Mm-hmm. And we're not playing any kind of selection or filtering, right? So we're just trying to hope that we draw the right mix of them. Right? Whereas, you know, the original version had 8 of each, right? It had 8 evolved creatures, 8 sacrifice effects, and 8 sacrifice fodder creatures. In exchange, right, it had more room in the deck for, like, you know, maybe even Spell Pierce, Lightning Bolt, that kind of stuff. It wasn't executing its game plan as consistently, and its game plan was a little bit more, you know, it topped out at 3/3s. Instant speed 3/3s. So it wasn't like, it was much lower ceiling, but in almost paradoxically, because it couldn't reliably execute its plan, like it sort of had to build in a little bit more interaction. So something that I would want to watch for if we test this one is like, are we maybe overdoing it with too much synergy? Like, is that possible? Like, you know, the Pelt Collector replaced Narnum Renegade, which, while not a good card, like it was better to draw one Experiment One and one Narnum Renegade than to draw like one Experiment One and one Pelt Collector, because like there you just have 2/1/1s and you hope to evolve them, but you haven't actually done it yet, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see definitely like 12 sac effects. Those seem like kind of like the weakest link in a sense. They're also the highest power ceiling effect.
Are 12 sac effects that we're playing?
So there's 3 Pongify, 3 Rapid Hyperization, 3 Neoform, 1 Sidisi's Faithful, then the 4th Neoform, which I will advocate for putting back in, and the 2nd Faithful, which I also want to put back in. So we have 10 in the list that you sketched.
And then the number that you're quoting is from you adding sacrifice effects to the decks.
That was more just for the symmetry, just to say that we have a balanced quantities of each, but like the point is we can tick that amount up or down, but like it's not immediately clear to me like what is the desired number.
I see.
And I think, yeah, I just want to watch for that in testing. Like, are we just drawing too much of one? Like, maybe we just need to like find slots for more of like a B plan.
I mean, that's why you see me not playing 4 of each of these effects, is because I am worried about having too many sacrifice effects. I don't think overloading on these is that good. Like 4 Neoform is fine, I guess. You're just getting really involved in having creatures in play that you want to sacrifice, and some of the ones you have in play are the ones you want to attack with. They're the ones you're trying to evolve. So I do think that the balance is the right one to find. I just find it interesting that you're advocating adding, and then without even having that number in, you're saying, don't we have too many sacrifice effects, in the same sentence.
Oh, that was me that said that.
Okay, also, like, it's not just the sacrifice effects. It's like the evolved creatures, 12 might be too many. Because the Pongify and the hybridization, like, they're not just sacrifice effects. They're the only ways to evolve these guys. So like I think you will often draw a hand that has like 5/1/1 creatures in it. And you know, you'll be like, well, I hope to evolve them, but I actually don't have that many cards that do that, right? Whereas, you know, the original version, which would not draw as many evolved creatures, it would just draw like some natural Curd Apes. Like, or Vexing Devil could be that thing. I think like finding the mix would be kind of something to watch for with this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Is there any hope for the mana base?
Not in this build, and even the teamer build, I think, was going to have terrible mana. Like, Stranglerout Geist is just, it's tough.
Yeah, I couldn't think of any lands that like really, that we can take advantage of. Like, Gemstone Mine was the only one that I could think of. I mean, maybe even just like City of Brass or Mana Confluence, but at that point, you're kind of just giving up. I don't know. Like, you need fetch lands if you're going to play Dryad Arbor, which I think is an important card here. And also, I've been advocating Evolution Sage that also requires fetch lands. I think, like, the one sort of backup plan I would have would be if the mana is just so bad, I would be open to dropping white and just trying to, like, bring back Avatar the Resolute. Because that card does get a lot better with Neoform specifically. Like, the reason that I hated that card in the original build was that, like, you can't really... You can play Experiment 1. If you follow it up with an Avatar or the Resolute on turn 2, it just does, like, the timing doesn't work. Like, the Avatar comes in as a 3-2, doesn't see a counter on the Experiment 1. And you just end up with a 2-2 and a 3-2. And it's like, you feel really bad about yourself. With Neoform, though, like, it does... just the way that the triggers resolve. Like, if you Neoform, like, a Young Wolf... The Young Wolf will come back first before your Avatar comes into play. So, like, the Young Wolf will have already evolved your evolved guys so that the Avatar will just, like, see more creatures in play that have counters on them. So he's slightly better in the Neoform deck than he was in the original build without Neoform. And, like, maybe that could just be, like, good enough. That might be a saving grace for the mana if it turns out that that's a problem. But if you drop the white, then, like, you also give up a lot of your sideboard options. So, I'm not sure.
Well, it's a pretty novel build. So, yeah, I think there's lots of different ways you can go with it. I think there's a lot to explore here. I do think Neoform gives you a lot of options that the deck didn't have before, which makes it sort of an interesting area of exploration in my mind.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if you move more towards green-blue. I mean, honestly, white is actually fairly easy to splash in a sense, as long as it's not like a thing you need on turn 1 or turn 2. Just because Horizon Canopy is actually such a good include in an aggro deck like this to help avoid flooding. And then you could cheat the hate bears into play with Neoform as needed.
Yeah, I think Canopy is a necessary land for this kind of deck. Also
you
painful.
You can't play that many because there's a bunch of times when you want to play Clefairy and Raptor on turn 1.
Maybe Clefairy and Raptor is the card that can go. I don't know.
I mean, if we're seeing too many evolved creatures, I don't know. That's powerful in Experiment 1 to me, but
interesting.
Like, isn't Pelt Collector in Experiment 1 like the best of all, like the two best evolved creatures, like Clefairy and Raptors and like.
I think flying is very important, so I guess it's not clear to me that Experiment 1 is better than Clefairy and Raptor.
I think I agree with David. I think Clefairy is the best.
Pelt Collector also doesn't, this is only a pretty loose case, but Pelt Collector doesn't see toughness. So Sadisi's Faithful, if we choose to play Renegade Rallier, it doesn't actually evolve, or Deputy of Detention. Those won't be cards that Pelt Collector sees.
Yeah.
That's kind of an edge case, though, honestly.
Yeah.
So he's Groundbreaker twice, though.
Yes, if we play Groundbreaker.
Yeah, that is pretty fringe, though.
It's also possible that because the deck is so fast, maybe we don't even want the, like, one Renegade Rallier. Like, that might just be for the weak at heart. Like, oh, I have this one out I can find if they, you know, play a bridge or whatever. It's like, yeah, maybe you should just go for it and... You're not going to be able to, like, run away a Blood Moon or whatever. You just have to take those losses and just play another aggro.
You mean Deputy, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I keep misspeaking. Yes, exactly. Deputy Detention.
So, okay, one card that I was wondering about is Noble Hierarch. Do you see any world in which that card helps the deck?
No.
I mean, it makes the deck both more and less explosive at the same time. Like, every sequence without a Hierarch is natural one drop, and then, like, turn two, you have two mana, you ideally spend it on something, right? If you replace that sequence with just a Hierarch on one, you still have three mana on turn two. You can do the same sequence. You just miss one attack. So, like, is in exchange, you get, like, better mana, like, better fixing. You have to find slots for it. So, like, that's kind of an issue. But you can push through, like, 3-3s. Like, creatures tend to, like, get up to 3-3 fairly often, but getting bigger than that takes a little work. So Hierarch, you know, can make them 4/4s, which is often important.
Yeah, I feel like we're not. I feel like we'll be talking with multiple creatures more often than not. I'm not sure Hierarch's Exalted ability is that powerful in the stack.
True. That's true. Yeah, I guess that is pretty rare to just swing with just one creature.
I mean, we're going to be commonly like neoforming Stranglerroot Geist into something. I mean, and then we'll have a one drop in play. So at that point, that Hierarch doesn't do anything. I mean, it taps or not. I mean, that's not nothing.
Okay, so I think we've sort of talked through like what this deck would like to do and where it might struggle. Do we have any other shells with Neoform on the docket for today, David?
I don't have any. I had some like value Neoform shells, and like I said, I just don't think that's what Modern is about right now. I don't think like, you know, whatever. Like, you could always make sure you have turn three Geist or something, but I just don't think that's good enough. I think either some kind of, like, super aggro version, like this Neo Monkey Grow, or some kind of, like, all-in combo, either the Allosaurus build, which, you know, maybe becomes a problem in Modern, you know, when all the Hive Mind starts to work on it, or... like I was saying before, some of the Collected Company decks that are already using some green tutors might find that Neoform is a better version of it. The restriction to the mana cost might end up being punishing, but they kind of often are playing one mana creatures anyway, so it kind of lets them upgrade their birds and Hierarchs into Devoted Druids or...
Yeah, I would be surprised not to see that be a deck. I think it's just Neoform's just better than Court of Calling most scenarios. Especially if you're playing the version of that deck that uses Postmortem Lunge to just sort of like, you know, you really want to combo them out. So you're gonna get your guy back with haste. On the subject of like value, you know, I do want to revisit that question maybe next week, these value decks, but let's save that for next week. okay, so of the ones we propose then... I think the one that I am the least optimistic about is the Eldrazi shell, mainly just because I don't think that the Neoform quite fits in with what makes the Eldrazi decks good. So I think that's one that I would maybe sort of keep on the back burner and maybe revisit with just Eldritch Evolution as the featured card instead of Neoform. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think you guys made some pretty on point critiques that I think are very, very accurate as far as the weaknesses of the Eldrazi deck and Neoform maybe not doing enough to address, you know, what the holes are, maybe even exacerbating them in some circumstances. And I'm not particularly like excited about playing that all in Allosaurus combo deck. I mean, I think the perfect version will be found, and I doubt it would be found by us. So I guess with that said, my main interest is in tuning the Neo Monkey Grow. It's something we were like pseudo considering for that GP, and just the addition of Pelt Collector and some amount of Neoforms, I think takes the deck in kind of an interesting direction as far as I'm concerned.
Damon, what about you?
Yeah, I agree that I think the Bant Eldrazi deck looks like the one that's the furthest from looking kind of league ready. The all-in Allosaurus one is interesting in the sense that you could probably play a league and only play 20 turns of Magic. Might be worth taking for a spin just for that reason alone. The Neo Monkey Grow one looks sort of most interesting. I don't really know which way that deck is going to go. Does it turn three Goldfish every game? Does it run out of gas? It's hard to say.
Yeah, I feel like... I want to see that deck be like something, but I don't know. I don't want to say competitive because it kind of feels like an FNM deck to me still. Like even when we were preparing for the GP and like I was winning a decent amount with the older version of the deck, it just didn't feel like I was supposed to be winning. It kind of felt like, you know, you're like a tricksy stompy deck, tricksy zoo deck. but like a lot of the games you would win like not executing your goldfish plan, but like you're certainly like trying to see how much you can get out of a rapid hyperization as an instant speed trick. And the answer is a lot. Like it's a very versatile card, but yeah, it's not a deck that overpowers people with its A plan most very often, even though so much of the deck is built around the idea that you will do that. So yeah, I'm just kind of curious to see like how it will perform with this new card in it. So that would be my vote, I guess, for the one that I feel like I want to play. Damon, though, if you're feeling like you want some turn one kills, though, if you want to play this Allosaurus Rider deck and let us know how it goes, be very interested to hear about that.
And like Dan was saying, you know, I think there's going to be a deck dump tomorrow, so slightly more tuned versions. That maybe have, like we said, the Children of Korlos is a possibility, the Wild Cantor is a possibility, various Elder Kill conditions. Those might be more rewarding in the sense that they may have tweaked out the numbers to maybe maximize those 10-turn leagues.
10-turn leagues. So, Damon, if you were to play that Allosaurus deck, so do you have any questions that you'd like to get answered about it from the games?
I mean, one question is just how often does it kill on turn one or turn two? Two is which of the kind of win conditions. I mean, the deck has this Borborygmos / Seismic Assault win and also has Gristlebrand Beats win. How it executes both of those, how gracefully it falls back to just Gristlebrand Beats, how good opponent's sideboarding plans are against it. Does the deck just fall apart game two and three against modern deck common sideboard cards?
And just to add to that, I mean, is there counterplay available to you from the sideboard? Like I don't know what sideboard you'll want to start with, but that would require a little brainstorming. Maybe like, what can you do to counter that? And I guess I'm also just wondering, like, what kind of hands can you keep? Like, what needs to be in the hand to make it a successful opening hand? Like, is this a London Mulligan deck where, like, all you really want is, like, a hand that actually has the Neoform and Allosaurus Rider in it, or the Summoner's Pact? Or, like, are there hands that are missing a piece that you'd be willing to keep if it had, like, the Serum Visions or Incubation or something like that? So that'd be a question I'd have as well.
I think that's true.
Yeah, and I guess I'm wondering if you feel like that, if you do play this, if there are matchups where you feel like having some disruption of your own would be useful. I know this is like not the list we were talking about, but you know, this idea of sacrificing Allosaurus Rider for Gristlebrand. Allosaurus Rider is not a playable card, of course. That's just blank cardboard. You use three cards to get this blank 1/1 into play. But like Gurmag Angler is a very good 7-drop that you could play. Maybe that's like the direction, the competitive version of this. Like, why not just play Gurmag Angler and Neoform that? Like, you know, Eldritch Evolution was always an option, but like it's kind of an expensive clunky card. So that'd be something that like, you know, maybe just keep that in mind as you're playing. Like, do we really need the Allosaurus Rider?
I mean, the one thing that not playing Delve Creatures does is it insulates you from graveyard hate, which is at an all-time high. And in fact, I think the takeaway from the Pro Tour is that decks that were doing well were playing main deck graveyard hate. They all had a piece or two. So that means even your game one, that should be where you're heavily favored. If you're never able to delve enough to play your guy, then your deck doesn't function, or doesn't function in a combo way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like I'm envisioning like a different deck. It would probably be more like a Death Shadow deck that happened to, you know, you're playing a full discard package, but it happens to have Neoform. Exactly. Yeah. So that'd be something like, I don't know. I guess I'll just keep that in mind as a sketch. I'll see if I come up with anything. But Dave, any questions you have for Damon if he decides to play this deck through? Any questions you want to see answered? We talked about.
I mean, I think he basically spoke to the question. I mean, how many free wins are you getting? And then if you can't get a free win, how reasonable is it to actually like play Magical Cards the Gathering? And then if they're doing something unfair, how much disruption can you possibly bring in? Or do you even need to do? Are you always faster? So it's just a question of trying to execute your game plan.
That sounds good to me. Then just to close off by talking about this Monkey Grow list, which I think I'm likely going to take through some games, and I think, David, it sounds like you might be interested in doing that too.
Oh, yeah.
What questions would you like to see answered from this deck from the playtesting?
I think the big one is, what you guys are talking about, is what are the ratios of cards? You know, we tried to make sure we have enough of each card to be consistent, but do we have basically enough cards to evolve? If we're going to play 12 evolved creatures, then we have to be able to evolve them a reasonable amount of the time. And if that's not the case, then we need to cut a couple, probably. And then how powerful is Neoform? You know, we're paying an extra mana and it's sorcery speed. So we have to really be able to get a lot of value out of it. And if we're not, for instance, seeing that like Neoform plus Voice of Resurgence is a winning play, that's the whole reason we're really splashing white, except for, you know, like we said, some hypothetical sideboard cards. So the number of times we Neoform Voice of Resurgence and don't get paid off on that, I think that should be a real eye-opener. And then the much more narrow question to me is, what three drops do we want to play? Like, is the value, you know, Renegade Rally or Get Back Voice plus get your Keldon Warlord worth it? Or are we always just going for kind of, you know, nuclear damage? And so we want the Evolve guy. Do we want to play the kind of Cowards Deputy Detention? Or, like, honestly, the more I think about it, we should just take a game two loss, like, if they get us. I mean, I think that might be reasonable. So I think those are kind of the questions to ask.
Right, I have the same questions, and to that I would just add, I guess I'm curious to know, like, what is the actual Goldfish kill turn in actual competitive game of Magic?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Even when we have our great starts, like, how long does it take us to deal 20 damage? And, like, what's our life? How many times have we shocked fetched in that time? And, like, you know, are we actually outracing anything? Or, you know, if we're not doing that, like, are we able to disrupt them with our removal effects? Right, because we can use Spongify's removal. We can use Sidisi's Faithful or Detention, Deputy Detention. But beyond that, we're not doing much to disrupt them in game one. So that leads to my second question is, like, does the sort of theoretical hate bear sideboard, where, you know, we have these Neoforms and we have a bunch of one-offs that we could play to, like, shore up some of these matchups, like, does that actually move the needle on these matchups? You know, before Neoform, there was no tutoring aspect at all. So it was just like, you know, just pick some cards, pick some Path to Exile, some Spell Pierce, and just hope to draw them. But, like, now we can almost, we sort of have five copies of any hate bear, you know, if we were playing four Neoforms. You have five copies of any hate bear you put in the sideboard. Does that help? And, yeah, I guess the third question would be, like, yeah, this is the numbers of one drops. I'm specifically wondering if I should be giving either Avatar the Resolute or Narnim Renegade another chance. Or Vexing Devil, as Damon was saying, that would require giving up on the white. A lot of questions for this one. A lot of questions. And hopefully we'll get some answers.
Yes. That's why we play the game.
All right. Well, I think that about does it for these decks. Any closing thoughts on Neoform?
Well, I think it's a sweet card. I think they keep printing interesting but limited tutors. And I think that makes the game of Magic really interesting. You know, I think tutoring effects historically have been too powerful. You can find any card and they've tooled around with these limited green tutor, you know, Green Sun Zenith is banned in Modern, Birthing Pod is also. So they try to kind of keep that as a thing that green does, and I think they keep sort of finding interesting wrinkles to keep printing interesting cards, and cards like this just kind of like bring out the brewer in you, like, what can you do? How can you break this card? How can you exploit it? There's a bunch of different ways to do it.
Well said. Well said. Damon, any last thoughts?
No, I'm curious to see how this performs. I can't wait to try Neoform in action.
All right. I definitely agree, and I'm excited to... I might fire this up in a league tonight. I don't know. I'll let you guys know how it goes. So, all right, that does it. We'll catch you guys later. See you next time.
Well, sounds good.
Later.
So that'll do it for episode one of Faithless Brewing. If you liked what you heard, you can follow us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG. We've posted there pictures of all of the deck lists that we discussed today. Or you can find us on the Modern subreddit at reddit.com/r/modernmagic. Look for a post by CaveDan2, that is myself. And please give us your feedback. We are a brand new cast and we would love to hear from you. hear what you liked, what you didn't like, and what we can do to improve the show. We hope you'll join us next week. We'll be following up on the Bant Monkey Form deck. We'll let you know how the testing results went. And we'll have a whole new set of brews built around another sweet one from War of the Spark that I can't wait to talk about. We hope to see you then.